Welcome to the Business of Open Source. Every week, we explore different aspects of the relationship between money and open source software, talking with industry experts about monetizing open source projects, building a company around an open source or several open source projects, and the business value that open source provides. Thank you for joining me. Welcome to the Business of Open Source. I am Emily Omir, your host, and today I'm joined by Ivar Ustos, who is the CTO, co-founder, and creator of Unleash. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Emily. Very excited to be here.
Likewise. Let's actually just start with an introduction. Can you introduce yourself and also introduce Unleash?
Yes, happy to. So I'm Ivar. I have a master's degree in telecommunications. I started my career as a consultant. I was working as a developer basically for big banks and insurances initially. And this really sparked my curiosity into how can we improve how we deliver software. I started to explore agile methodologies. I started to learn about automation and continuous delivery pipelines because, I learned a lot of how not to ship software, to say it honest. And then we have Unleash. I'm the creator and CTO of Unleash. Unleash is the open source feature management solution. So this is a tool for developers, allowing them to kind of use feature toggles at scale in their companies. It's a very, very simple technique that just makes it easier and more safe to ship software. And we are a remote first company starting in the pandemic.
Thank you for that introduction. I already have lots of questions, but my first question is actually when we were first started talking, you mentioned that you have your job title, blah, 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 CTO, but you think of yourself as the creator of Unleash. What does that mean to you? And how is it different from saying like, oh, I'm the founder of this company?
I have always liked to build stuff. That's also why I also think of myself as a developer. And to being a developer, that is about creating stuff. And usually it's about creating stuff that hasn't been created exactly in that way before. And this is why I think of myself as a creator and not just a founder. Obviously, I was a founder and there is a lot of nice things about being a founder. But for me, it's even more close to my heart to be a creator.
That makes total sense. And so let's actually get into why you felt like the world needed Unleash. And related to that is LaunchDarkly gets a lot of attention. And so what's different aside from being open source?
Yeah, I think there is a lot to unpack here. And I actually want to go to back to the beginning. And I hope I will come back to all of your questions. If not, please remind me. But I want to go back to when Unleash was born. And this was back in 2014. At the time, I was working for a very large company here in Norway, software company, building software platform for all the Norwegians to consume. And we had already back then, we had automated all our pipelines. We were kind of shipping software theoretically when we wanted to. And at my team, we were very ambitious. We wanted to do weekly sprints. We were doing agile. We wanted to ship something all the time because that's the best way to learn is to get the code out there into production, see how it works. The challenge with that is that it usually takes some time to build a new feature or an iteration of a feature that is meaningful for the end user. So I was struggling a bit with this because we didn't ship code every week and we started having all these feature branches. It made everything complicated. It made it really hard to test stuff really, really well before it went out because releasing software was very binary. It was either on and you had to ship everything to everyone or you didn't ship. That bugged me a lot. So back in 2014, we didn't have LaunchDarkly, at least not available to the public as today. I started obviously exploring which open source alternative is there out there. And I couldn't find much that was working the way I wanted it to. And our needs was particular, like we already had microservices. We already had multiple programming languages. I didn't want to have a framework in my application because that meant I had to implement this in all our application and it didn't make sense to me. And I couldn't find this tool that could just allow me to easily integrate this into all the application, but still have this centralized kind of dashboard that allowed me to manage the feature toggles at scale. So I started exploring, maybe I should build this myself. It can't be that hard, like a naive creator of the time. It seemed like a trivial thing to do. So I started on a small project building this. And to me, feature management, this is about a lot of things, but it boils down to collaboration to me. It's a tool that allows developer to collaborate easily by doing trunk-based development, collaborate on new functionality, test it out early in production or any test environment as they like, and involve stakeholders, involve the users early in the testing phase and get feedback. Because in the end, it doesn't matter if they're building the greatest thing in the world, if we're building something nobody needs or solving it in the wrong way. So that's, to me, is kind of the essence of why was Unleash born. And then coming back to why open source. And I think, to me at least, open source is beneficial for many reasons and is obviously our core differentiator. To me, it's about flexibility, because being open source also means that you don't know exactly how people are going to use your product. You don't know exactly where it's going to run, how it's going to run. And it means that you need to be more customizable. You need to have more adapters. You need to basically be more flexible on how you operate the platform and your capabilities.
Just to dive in a little bit more about why did you make this an open source project? And then at what point did you say, okay, I want to make this open source project into a company?
To be totally transparent on why I did it open source, it was kind of two main drivers for that. One thing was that I knew that this was not core for the company I was working for. Then I saw that it would be very hard for the company to invest an amount of time into this kind of maintaining it, further developing it. So I very early on kind of raised this as a concern and said, I'm willing to take on this as an open source side project, but then it needs to be purely open source, meaning that I can do whatever I want with it. It cannot be kind of coupled to the company. And I'm happy to do that, but it should be kind of living on its own. The other motivation I had was that, as many companies do, is that there was a lot of kind of internal libraries that you usually use to do stuff, to resolve config, to resolve secrets, to kind of manage your applications. And I saw that there was a pain in terms of adopting other tools when they depended on these shared libraries, because you needed to depend on them in the right order, in the right version, and all of that. And I actually thought that if I just made this open source, it would be easier for the other teams in this company to adopt the tool. It turned out to be true. So that was fantastic.
Excellent. I was just going to ask if that assumption was true or not. So tell me more, like, at what point did you decide this is more than just an open source project and I want to make it into a company?
You put it on GitHub and then everyone discovers, right? It's a lie. It doesn't happen like that. I put it on GitHub, obviously, but it was basically me using it, my friends, my colleagues, and obviously friends in other companies started to adopt it. I did observe a few patterns, though, and one of the patterns I saw was that when developers in my current company quit the company, they started to introduce Unleash to the new company they were hired to. And I thought that was interesting. If I had been a bit smarter back then, I would maybe have picked up on it earlier, but it actually didn't pick up on it. I felt like this was a very fun side project. It was a very kind of isolated problem for a while, so I kind of kept it as a side project, developed it further, got some more contributors along the way. A lot of people helped out. At some point, this was back in 2018, roughly summertime, the project had around 400 GitHub stars. And 6 months later, it suddenly has more than doubled in just 6 months. And that was a point of time when people started really contributing to the project. I suddenly had maintainers for several of the SDKs in different programming languages that I didn't write myself. Suddenly also companies started reaching out. I literally got questions like, can you host this for us? Can you build this enterprise feature for us? So that is obviously a very early indicator that there is something here.
Tell me more about the moment when you were like, okay, we're taking the plunge. And also you have co-founders. It wasn't just you. So this obviously was a decision that was made jointly with other people.
So what happened was that this was obviously happening in the transition between 2018 and 2019. My co-founder is actually my big brother. He is more of a business guy. He has the same background as me, but he quickly moved into management, business school, all of that. And I was out with my big brother and we were having beer and burgers like we sometimes do. And I think this was Jan 2019. And I started talking about this project with him and telling him like what was happening. Like, this is crazy. Companies all over the world is running this in production. And it seems to be valuable to a lot of people, or at least companies. He is more like, yeah, you have to do something about this. You have to start a company or something. And kind of back then, I almost felt like he was crazy. But then again, like after a few beers, it was like, yeah, maybe we should do that. And then we started talking more seriously after that. We both had good jobs back then. I was kind of now leading kind of the architect group. I was the chief enterprise architect. He was leading one of the large engineering org out of Netherlands, more than 400 developers. So we both had good jobs. So we wasn't really ready to jump ship just yet. But we started this company, and inside I saw that this is actually the enabler for an open source project, because it's really hard for companies to buy software from an individual. Obviously, they can go in, they can support you, they can sponsor you, but that's not how company buy software. It's kind of very loose contracts on both sides. Much, much easier to actually buy from an actual company. So by starting our own company, we started actually getting customers almost like after a few weeks after we started. It took us some time because we wanted, instead of just jumping and doing this full time, we wanted to learn a bit about the market, the position, the possibility. We both had kind of families, full jobs, nice jobs. So we started to talk to customers, and we had so strong inbound that almost all customers came to us. And within a year, with full jobs, we were talking to more than 100 potential customers in just 12 months. And it wasn't just any company. It was like Fortune 500 companies. We even sold to some of them early on. And we were just doing this as a side gig. So that was kind of the aha moment for me, at least. Like, yeah, there is something here. We are actually talking to some really, really interesting companies. And they see the value, and they're coming without us marketing this thing.
What would you say was the reason that they were coming to you? Now I'm gonna come back to asking you about LaunchDarkly. Sorry, I don't actually usually do this, but it's mostly because they're just a company that gets so much hype that it makes me curious how you go against them and what makes somebody come to Unleash instead of LaunchDarkly.
There is a couple of things. So I think obviously we touched on the open source. Apart from that, you also get the trust, the transparency. So us, at least in the beginning, now we are a bigger organization. We can have more intrinsic trust out of kind of being well-funded, all of this. But in the beginning, just the fact that you can go in, inspect the code, you can see how we treat the code, you can see all the contributors, you get kind of unlimited transparency into that. That means also that you can run your own security scanners on the code. You can validate that the code is well structured. So you can prove out the quality of the code itself. And this also allows us to not deal with or use a lot of energy about protecting the IP or anything like that. We can focus on how can we, together with the customer, create value. And they can even chime in. And a lot of companies, they really love the ability to be part of that creative process of enhancing the product. We even have customers providing bug fixes to the code itself. But there is also a lot of other factors. So what we have learned is that open source would really simplify the procurement process. And so the companies we are selling to is very highly regulated. They have very strict policies on how they buy software. And involving procurement for them is a lot of investment. Being a team or a smaller part of that organization and starting that kind of train of procurement, you don't want to do that if you don't trust that you're getting the value out of it, because you can never back out of it. So it's really, really tough to buy software in some of these companies. And the last thing is also where we have been very, very cautious is that, and this is very important to me personally, but also maybe because I'm out of Europe, is GDPR privacy part. So we have carefully architected Unleash in such a way that we don't collect end user data, period. We don't do that. This is not our business. And because we have decided to do that, we have to do some stuff slightly differently. You can achieve a lot of the same things. We just decided to do it a bit differently in our API and UI, meaning that you can also trust that we will not go out and collect your end user data. And obviously, for the type of customers we are dealing with, this is a big thing. Knowing that we don't store end user data inside of Unleash just takes away that risk entirely.
That makes total sense. And by the way, do you know Ethoca, the company?
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, after the podcast, I will make an introduction. They're a privacy engineering open source project and also company that I think you should know if you care about privacy.
I will check them out.
Excellent. I'm actually curious, you mentioned one of the reasons that you care about GDPR and things like that is because you're a European company. Do you think that being in Europe, being a Norwegian company, has been advantageous, or has it put you at a disadvantage, or just neutral?
I think it depends. So in Europe, obviously, it's a benefit. It's a European law to buy software from other European companies. That's a fact. Doesn't mean you cannot sell if you're an American company. I'm not kind of going that far, but I see that it's kind of an extra plus on our side. When it comes to US, they're much more pragmatic to that question, in my opinion, at least in my experience, is that Americans, if you have a software that kind of solves their need and they love the product, they love the company, they don't care where you're from, to be honest. At least being European, I can say that maybe that's not the same experience from other countries. I cannot tell, obviously. But at least being from Norway, from Oslo, it doesn't seem to be any challenge for American companies.
I will say what I've seen is that many European companies, they care a little bit more about the open source aspect when buying from an American company. I have seen that trend that they feel uncomfortable with like something that's hosted in the US, but if they can run it themselves, that's fine.
And that's also, maybe that's an important point. And this is again, taking back to the privacy part. So we also, part of our hosted offering, the cloud offering that we have, is that we also been very careful on how we host stuff. We are doing single tenancy, meaning we will not mingle your data with other customers' data. You will have your own database. It will also be in your preferred region. So European companies, they can rest assured we are only hosting your data, your instance, everything you need inside Europe, if you ask us to. And the same for US. And we also have actually now seeing more and more privacy concerns coming from the US. So we do see American companies asking us, are you storing our data in Europe? We would not like that. So please, can you guarantee it will only stay in the US? And we can. And that's also the beauty of being very, very careful on where you store data, is that we see that that can actually become a competitive advantage.
Fabulous. You mentioned earlier on that, you know, you didn't notice the pattern of engineers leaving the company you were at and taking Unleashed to other places soon enough. What were some other sort of early mistakes or interesting mistakes, I should say, that you made that you can only see in hindsight now?
Being developers, you do mistakes all the time, I guess. But from a company perspective, I think there is a couple of things. One thing is that the first year when we started kind of exploring, learning about the market, we were convinced that the open source and the paid offering needed to be separate. That was a total mistake. It confused ourselves. It confused the customer. It confused the open source users. It was just a mess because nobody understood what was what. We learned the hard way that it was so much easier if we just treated the open source and the paid offering as the same thing, the same project, but obviously different bundles, different things you can buy. And by buying the paid version, you might get some extra features, the open core model, obviously, and the hosted offering and all of that. But it made it so much easier to resonate with customers.
What do you mean by separate?
We thought that it needed it almost like it needed a different brand. We didn't go that far, but we called it like Unleash Hosted, and it's not Unleash, and it even had its own landing page, and we didn't talk about the open source project. So we were kind of fighting against ourselves, basically. It was not, for us at least, it was not resonating with either the open source community or the customers.
Yeah, that's a good point. Actually, some companies do go that route and they have a completely different name, completely different brand for the open source versus the commercial offering. And it is making things harder for yourself.
I think there is more mistakes, but I'm not sure. We don't have to go through all of them, obviously. I think all companies do mistakes. one for us, and this is probably because the open source had, we were a bit late into the commercial offering. So we were relying a bit too long on the inbound out of the open source. So it's just like the last year we started to learn how to outbound, get in a marketing team, learning how to acquire customers that is not coming through the open source. And that is actually harder than you would think. I think we got a bit slow into that learning curve, to be honest. And we see that now that we could probably be a bit further ahead if we had started that journey a bit earlier on.
Yeah, that's, I think, a pretty common mistake, especially if you start with a huge number of leads from the open source, which is a good problem, right?
It's a really good problem to have, I must admit, yeah.
One of the things that you mentioned in sort of our pre-show notes was about considering open source users as long-term support. What do you mean by that?
We have a lot of companies using the open source in production, and I thought that we could leverage that to really rapidly do innovation, learn fast what to build, get feedback on what we build. And it turned out that it doesn't work like that. It's just too slow to engage them. People are busy, you know, and they're busy running their own company. They're not there. Obviously, they will be involved sometimes, but then they go and are busy doing other stuff and they will come back. What I learned the hard way is that if we want to run as fast as we want to do, we want to ship every day a new functionality, get feedback, see that it works. We cannot rely on the open source because we don't control when they have time. That's not the obligation they have to us. And we don't control when they want to upgrade the open source even. That's something they decide for themselves. And if we happen to introduce a bug in the open source, we risk the fact that someone might upgrade to that buggy version and we fix it immediately, maybe the next day. They don't get that upgrade because they're not waiting around to see if we have a new fix for them, if they are not obviously knowing about that. So we have shifted this all on the head now in the last 6 months. So now we are kind of using Unleash to build Unleash, meaning we are using the cloud offering and particularly kind of the lower tier of the pro, we call that the pro tier, the pro customers, self-serve customers. We are using those customers to validate the new features we are building as we build them. We get daily feedback from these users. We can monitor the metrics. We can see look at the logs if there are errors in the logs. And we can get very, very rapid feedback on the features we build. And then when we're happy with those features, we can make more predictable releases towards open source. So what we do now is that we have shifted to do one new release on a monthly cadence of Unleash open source. And every time we do that, we only include features we already have validated in our cloud offering. So it gives a lot of much more stability. So you can almost see that if you inspect kind of our release cadence the last few months, you can see that if you go 6 months back, there was a lot of patch releases every time we did a release to the open source because we found all these small bugs. But now we do very little patch releases the day after because we are only releasing stuff we already validated.
And so you're using your customers, your hosted customers, for that quick feedback loop rather than your open source.
Absolutely. And they are so much more incentivized to give feedback because they're putting money on the table and they are there for the long run. They want us to succeed, right? And they are obviously also, we also listen a lot to open source users. If they provide good feedback, we also take that into our prioritization. But it's even easier with customers. They tend to have more time. They're more incentivized to try out new functionality. At least when we are hosting it for them, it's so much easier for us to, would you like to beta test this new feature? We can just turn it on for you in production runtime using Unleash to do that, obviously. And we already are kind of talking with these customers. So it's so much more easier to get kind of this really rapid feedback loop.
We've touched on a lot of things, but are there any values that you get from being an open source company that you haven't had time to sort of unpack? We've talked about how being open source like sort of helps get through the procurement process, which I think is fascinating. Anything else that you think is important to mention?
Obviously, this is everyone has to think themselves on how they think about these things. To me, is all DevTool will eventually be open source. And I think the reason for that is that it's developers, they really And the way they want to engage themselves in the tools they use is that they want to have the ability to inspect it, to try it out without calling or being called by sales, the ability to download, try it without, and know that nobody is looking over your shoulder and looking at what you're doing. At least I can envision a future where the majority of dev tool will be closed sourced in the future. I cannot see that happening. And I just see for myself and how we are kind of, at least the customers we are interacting with and how they are talking about this. The value of keeping it open allows us to focus on collaboration with the customers, co-create, kind of focus on building, creating, instead of kind of protecting and keeping it secret from each other.
Sort of wrap up, what's the biggest challenge you're grappling with now?
Actually, the biggest thing, and don't get me wrong, it's not that we are not trying and doing a lot of things, but I think still it's hard, challenging, and that's actually the community part of it. So we have done, obviously, just the fact that we are open source, we are supporting all the users, we're getting a lot of really, really good feedback. That's all nice, but it's still really hard when you have not done that before, like having a really clear community strategy. How are you engaging with the developers? How are you making sure you are providing value, but they also can get value from each other, from being part of this community? I find this really, really hard because at least the developers in our community are super talented. They have challenging jobs. How can we justify that being part of our community and being active in our community will benefit you? We really need to make sure that a lot of value, a lot of learnings, a lot of things you can get out of taking part in that. And I find this really, really hard. And don't get me wrong, we are doing a lot of things. Last week, we have been on a couple of meetups in person to learn more. How can we kind of interact with developers? We're doing webinars. We're doing a lot of things that developers seems to give really good feedback on. But I still find it hard to transform that into a clear strategy and understanding of what does it really mean to be part of our community.
I think that a lot of people struggle with that. From my understanding, just the fact that you're aware probably puts you ahead of at least 80% of the other companies out there. Anything else that you'd like to add before we wrap up?
No, I think covered a lot of interesting topics today, things that are very close to my heart. I just want to thank you, Emily. This was a really, really nice chat.
How can listeners connect with you or learn more?
You can find me on LinkedIn, Twitter. You can go to our Slack or go look us up on GitHub, basically. Unleash Org on GitHub. There you will find everything.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you so much. This was a great conversation.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Business of Open Source. If you'd like to learn more about positioning, messaging, and go-to-market for open source and cloud-native startups, head over to my blog, positioningopensource.com. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. I'm at Emily Omier, and you can feel free to reach out on Twitter or on my website and blog with questions or comments. If you enjoyed this episode, also please share and help more people discover this podcast. Thank you, and we hope to have you next week.